Good morning. So today we're going to begin a series of investigation of what we can call the psychology and philosophy and morality of the Torah. And I'm basing our discussion of these basic topics on essays of Rav Dessler, who was one of the great masters of the philosophy and psychology of Musar. To explain the concept of Musar, which is best paraphrased as ethical discipline, that the basis of our understanding of the human being is that we be given freedom in the area of morality. The concept also accepted by leading philosophers of ancient times and more recent times, especially Kant, that whilst in the area of our physical being, our freedom is limited, and we're all given a body which is limited by the constitution, physical constitution with which we are born, and also influences of the environment over which we have no control. But in the area of moral choice, every human being is free to choose the good from the bad. It's perhaps limited by the knowledge we possess of good and bad with our intelligence. So a person, let's say, who's got deficiencies in his intelligence, the extent that he is not capable of many mental normal activities, it happens to some people, that's also beyond his control. Therefore, just like we say, a shoter, a person who's insane, is free from all mitzvot, and is generally speaking, and if it's extreme in any case, in his mental illness, he's not able to have control. And the mental qualities of his brain are influenced by chemical or biochemical elements of which he has no direct control. But even in them, there is generally a pricking of the conscience, also at a certain level. When it comes to the conscience, every human being is free. The conscience tells a person, according to his ability, what is right and wrong. So the great saint also, who has been brought up in an environment and perhaps also many genetical powers that lead towards saintliness, he's probably not even free. Like most of us, I want to go into this more deeply, most of us sitting here, we don't have freedom to murder, to rape. Many of us don't have freedom to steal either. We are conditioned by our genes and by our families and by our environment against being able to commit such crimes. But things change. And then, you know, we see today the most terrible things going on where little children are these days, a very extreme example, which is terrible, that they're exposed, even as children, to the most cruel methods of Daesh.
Death?
Of the extreme murderous organization of the Islamic State, which is insanity. We'd call it insanity. But they choose to do it. I just saw now, heading. You see, they pay $150 anyone who joins their ranks. and they give it over to people who have no income. The children have no income either. They give it to them. They join their ranks, then they are exposed to witness. I don't even I even hate to mention it by name and to bring up that image, but the way in which they these days kill people, and little children are exposed to it. It's the most terrible situation for them. So they become brain contaminated in the early years to murder in the most cruel manner. And that's what's going on in the world today. We try to encourage in our education children to keep away even from thinking about such matters, for all the obscenities of disrespect for human life, which, I mean, the Torah goes in the opposite extreme. Why was the Torah given? You can even say the Torah was given to us in order to develop the human conscience to its highest level. Because the human being is created, B'Tselem Elokim, and each human being is given a soul, and that soul can be developed to the highest level to control the body and even to control the world, and to bring happiness and life and productivity to all human beings. But it can do the opposite as well. And when it says in the Chumash, "See, I've set before you today life and virtue, death and vice." That's it. So the sages say, the saints, even when they're dead, they're called alive because the influence continues. And the wicked, even when they're alive, they're really dead. They've killed their soul. They've made it inactive in this world. So this is the eternal battle of the human being against the Yetzer Hara. And this is already referred to, we often described it, in the original creation of man, when man was given the choice to choose between good and evil, and he was told, if you want to retain the path of virtue, the divine image, you have to keep to the original commands which were given to Adam and Eve, which were really what we call today the Noahide Code. It's already given to Adam HaRishon. Because to understand the Noahide Code more deeply, it's there to develop the conscience. And then afterwards, when mankind deteriorated, went down and down, all the 10 generations from Adam to Noah, which brought the world basically to extinction of life, more or less, with the only individuals being saved, because they did retain righteousness in their generation, but only for themselves. So Noah, when the deluge decreed, the deluge called Mabul. Mabul means the connected root Naval. Naval is the baseness of the human being. In the Tanakh, the word Naval is used for this. Naval is a person who is based in his character. He allows his character to wither away. His divine image almost disappears. As we see today in the world, unfortunately, these extremists move, and some of them, they've got no concept anymore of the divine image. And this is the terror which we're faced with today, from the combination of the worst forms of narcissism with the most evil forms of murderous instincts, instincts of hate being developed by certain sections of mankind. This is an unfortunate situation in which we live. In addition to that, we live in the age when the mass media, they reflect all the worst sensations that take place in the world, and therefore they're corrupting the human character and almost causing the divine image, the human being, to disappear. And if people are raised on this, then it's who knows what's going to happen to mankind. And in this situation, we, the people of Israel, have to work in the opposite direction. We have to demonstrate the high level of producing saintliness in this world and love in this world. And of course, the first example that's given also of this situation, after Adam, is the example of Cain and Hevel. But also, Cain was told, he also allowed the evil inclination of wanting to overcome any things that his brother possessed on a higher level. So he was given this statement. He said, listen, it's all up to you. You don't think that you can say it's my nature to go and hate my brother. No, it's not your nature. It's not your true nature. It all depends on you. You should know in life, the situation is like this, that sin crouches at the door. and it wants to attack you, the sinful instincts want to attack you, and your purpose is to rule over it. You, in life, you've got to rule over your dangerous instincts, which are murderous. Jealousy leads to hatred, and hatred leads to murder. That's the warning he was given. But you've got to rule over it. He didn't rule over it, so he killed his brother, and then he was wandering. The only way he could learn to recognize the importance of his good inclination, what by being banished to go from place to place and finding no home, and in that way, ultimately, he realized, in fact, he called the name of his son Chanoch, he realized he's got to introduce education for the good. If you don't introduce education for the good, then the evil nature of man will overcome him. So this is the concept of the battle in the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov. And Hashem, why did he reveal his will to Noach? Why did he reveal his will afterwards to Avraham? And then revealed his will to Yitzchok and to Yaakov? Then afterwards to the people of Israel? Because he wanted to give help for mankind to overcome the evil instinct and create a world which is a Gan Eden, which was the original plan of Hashem. And it was the ultimate plan of Hashem, because all the prophets speak that the whole world could become a Gan Eden. Only, the condition is, we've got to learn the lesson of the battle between good and evil, between love and hate, and we have to work on ourselves. So now, I'm going to introduce it directly. This is page 455 from the writings of Rav Dessler, from his essays. Now, the greatness of Rav Dessler was as follows. He was a person who mastered, I would say, all the levels of deep interpretation of the Tanakh, the Bible, of all the Midrashim, who was making use of the Arizal, and afterwards of the Maral of Prague, who is one of the deepest exponents of all the sayings of the sages, which have to do with, let's call it, not just halakha, but also the base of halakha, which is the outlook of the Torah upon life. And also those who have been learning for some time will know that the Maral of Prague was really the major inspiration for Hasidut, for Hasidic teachings at a deeper level. And because nearly all the Torah to Hasidut is based upon really interpretations of the Maral, that is a way of expounding the esoteric traditions of Torah, which go back to the days of the prophets. Because the prophets were on a very high level, and they had an oral tradition, apart from what's written, of passing on the inner aspects of the Torah, not only the external aspects of what you have to do, but also how you have to understand the world and the human being, which is expounded in the esoteric writings of ancient times, starting with the Sefer Yetzirah, the base of which, the Book of Creation, is attributed to Avraham Avinu. And these oral traditions continued, are described in the Mishnah and the Talmud, the deeper level, and were always kept only for those who could really understand it clearly. It shouldn't be the distortions. And then it went through the whole range of writings of what's generally known as the Kabbalah, expounded first in the Zohar, and then afterwards by the Arizal, and afterwards by the Maral, and brought down to our level through great spiritual mentors such as was Rav Dessler, who mastered all these areas. So here on page 455 in the fifth volume, we're fortunate enough, first of all, that I had the great privilege to sit at the feet of many of the greatest scholars of the previous generation, and amongst them also Rav Dessler, and especially his closest disciple was a partner starting this yeshiva, Rav Ari Kamel, who edited his writings. So I'm going to use this as a text. And the text is in clear Hebrew. And it's a very good idea. That's why I'm giving you photocopies. You can also learn Hebrew from it. And at the same time, make your notes on these pages so that you can also use them afterwards if you want to go on teaching these subjects, as has been done in the past. Now, a few volumes of his writings were paraphrased by Rav Kamel in booklets called Strive for Truth. But it didn't cover the major part of what Rav Kamel himself with others edited in Hebrew. And since since Rav Kahn was no longer able to give shiurim, so I've carried on and have paraphrased nearly most of his other portions into English. And I'm continuing it with now also. I take those sections not yet been paraphrased. So what I'd like to do is to read sections and translate them clearly. Then afterwards you ask all your questions. And that way the paraphrase can then be used, and it's being recorded, can then be used to edit, re-edit his whole concept of Torah as it is being done by a number of people in Hebrew, to have this done in English as well. So on page 445 in the fifth volume, he deals with a concept called Shechitat HaSatan, slaughtering Satan. So you see here, Shechitat HaSatan. Now the word Satan, what does it mean? Let me ask you. Who is Satan? Who in your view is Satan? You've all heard the word Satan.
It's an angel. It's the Crusader. It's what he's saying.
Yes.
What's
the root of the word? It's always good in Hebrew, since Hebrew is a language, the sages say, in which the world was created. You want to understand things at their roots. It's a good idea to try to analyze Hebrew words, right down to their inner meaning, and call it psycholinguistics. That's what's called in modern times. The psycholinguistics of Hebrew are well known, because if you look at modern works on psycholinguistics, generally speaking, one of the main languages they analyze is Hebrew, for clear reasons, if you go into it deeply. Satan. What's the root of the word Satan? It's used in the Tanakh and the Bible. In which sense is it used? Now, what's the root of it?
He tested him. Obstacle. It's a test.
Obstacle.
Yeah.
Satan also means an obstacle. Satan. In the way which causes you to go aside from the way, like a sota is, and a woman who's gone away from her morality, sota, she turns away to another. Not with the sheen, but the seen. There's a difference in Hebrew, the sheen and the seen. The seen is frequently it has interchange with the samach, because when sounds sound the same, there's all sorts of, the meaning is somewhat similar. It means to go away from the right path. We find, for example, when the donkey spoke to Bilam, it said there was in front of me the malach, the Satan. It stopped me going the right direction. It stopped him. Satan is that which stops us going the right direction. It's also mentioned in the book of Iyov. Who is Iyov? Do any of you know Iyov? One of the books of the Bible is Job, Iyov.
It's a discussion, right? Some say he never existed. Some say it's
a Gilgal of
Moshe Rabbeinu.
There are many differences of opinion as to who was Eov. But what does the word Eov mean?
Enemy.
Oyev is the enemy. So Eov is really the man whose life is such that it seems that this man is the enemy of God. In other words, that God is making his life miserable. Eov deals with this, with the age-old question of why do human beings suffer from a good God. That's the main subject, a very deep subject and very important subject, perhaps more important today than ever because of the Holocaust. The people, why do God's beloved people have to suffer so much? So anyway, we won't go into that question now, but I just want to point to you that Satan is the one who is an angel of God, as you said. In other words, it's the power of evil that exists in the world to test the human beings, you said. It's a test. The test of life is, how can you overcome evil? Evil in yourself, and evil in the world. And even the evil that you think comes from God, what is the meaning behind it? The evil you think comes from God often makes people say, well, this is too difficult for me. If God is such a good God, if I had the word God in most languages connected with the concept of totally good, and also the Shem Havai, Midas HaChesed, is described, if you go to deeply in the Tanakh, the words of the sages, as the quality of constant love. So if there's constant love, why are there things that seem like hate? Constant love from Hashem, and there are things that bring Hashem brings the suffering. So therefore, the word Satan is really, the sages say like this, go into it more deeply. They say there are three concepts we find, both in the Tanakh and also in the sages. We find the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination in man. Man certainly has, unfortunately, a very, very evil inclination, far worse than the beasts. I mean, what I just described before, there's no species of animal that does such things I described before. It doesn't exist. Only human beings can make up such terrible cruelties. And also gas chambers do. There are no animal species that do it. To compare the evil inclination, the human being, that is an animalistic power, is much worse. Can't compare it. The Yetzer Hara. Then there's the Malach HaMavet. Why should there be death? If Hashem gives us such a fantastic life, why should there be a power of death? And also death instinct. Malach HaMavet is the power of death also, as we know. Let's say the in-depth psychoanalysts and psychologists, they say the strongest powers in the world are Eros and Thanatos. Eros is the power of life and love, and Thanatos is the power of death, the death instinct. The death instinct exists amongst human beings. And it's death, so that's the second aspect, death instinct. And the Malach HaMavet so often comes to people when you think they don't deserve it. Why does death come onto people all of a sudden when they've got so much promise for good inside themselves and they're kind of all of a sudden, where's the justice? So that's one of the problems. So then there's the Satan, which the Satan is generally referred to as a divine quality, Hasatan, that stops good from existing in this world. So Satan is on the divine level, and the Malach HaMavet on the angelic level, that means the powers that come from Hashem, like death and life, which comes also from Hashem frequently. And then there's the evil inside man. So the sages say, Hu HaMalach HaMavet, Hu HaSatan, Hu HaYetzara, they're all the same. They're not, so why do we have three different words? The point is they all have the same root. The root of all of them is the same. So the way that Rav Dessler expounded this, because that Dessler is a very deep psychologist. You know, I sometimes asked him a question after he gave a talk. I remember a discussion I had with him. I said, Rav Dessler, have you really studied the works of Freud and Adler and Jung? And so he said, no, what I'm saying is entirely on the basis of what sages say. But he knew, he had wide other knowledge, he didn't go into too deeply, but he found these truths. Rav Olbo is also one of the founders of the yeshiva, one of the great mentors of recent times. So he says like this, he develops this concept, Rav Dess also mentions a few times. He said, when we find amongst the nations of the world that there's certain concepts that enter into their description of the human being and the human challenges, and then we see it also in the writings of our sages, you'll see that our sages preceded them. The Kantian idea is a clear idea already mentioned in the Tanakh, if you go into it deeply, and certainly in Chazal, of the categorical imperative, as he calls it, of the ought as opposed to that which is, that which ought to be, which is the difference in practical reasoning and pure reasoning. Die reine Vernunft und die praktische Vernunft. There's different works of Kant. So, as his main disciple, Hermann Cohen, became a Baal Teshuva as a result of this and uncovered the Jewish sources for Kantian ideas. Rav Olbo was fond of quoting from Yisroel Salanter, the founder of the Musa movement. In one of his famous letters, he speaks about subconscious powers and conscious powers. And it discusses them quite deeply. This was 100 years before Freud described it, the power of the subconscious. So we have subconscious powers, and the subconscious powers I myself am fond of quoting thank you very much the recent what's called something I'll call it the post-war on Viennese psychology. One of the Freudian psychologists of pre-war times was a person called Viktor Frankl. And when he came out from the Holocaust, which he experienced himself, he came up with a new concept of logotherapy, it's called, by the psychologists. He said the main instinct of the human being is not the libido, it's the instinct to find meaning in the world, and purpose in the world. His later book that he wrote a book called The Unconscious God, where he says, now what we call the conscience in the human being is really the unconscious power of God. Describes its length. So you'll find it also in one of the books we had here, a teacher called Blumenthal, the Humabit. And I corresponded with him when I saw that book, and I pointed out that there are many things in his book which reflect the type of interpretation given by the Maharal of Prague. So he wrote back to me and said he in fact traced his descent to the Maharal of Prague and became very interested. And then he started linking to fill in, became a bit of a false Schubert. So also we find that he, in his own way, going through all the experiences both of pre-war psychoanalysis and then trying to understand his own experiences and new ideas that were developed in the concentration camps. And he came out as a survivor, so he recognized the truth of his path. So it's like this. The root of understanding the Satan and the Malach HaMavet, it's all to understand the power of the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah was given to the human being because this is the essence of the human being, is how to overcome it and how to allow the Yetzirah, all the materialistic and lower instinct of the human being to be channeled by the good inclination. When we say in the morning, the sage, what does it mean with your whole heart? Now the word lev is the heart, levav is the double heart. Because we've got a double heart. We've got a yetzirah tov, the heart are the feelings. We've got feelings for good and feelings for evil. And every human being has it at a certain level. As we just described. So this is the struggle of each human being and the struggle of the world. Who's going to rule? So through the power of the love of Hashem, we have the ability to overcome being ruled by the Yetzer Hara, and we have the Yetzer HaTov that can channel and direct all aspects of the Yetzer Hara. Yetzer is material instincts, which are all of good purpose, if they are led by the Yetzer HaTov. So as Matthew Arnold said, the human being is a bundle of conflicting emotions, and the psychologists and psychoanalysts have developed that the human being is in a turmoil of conflicts in different ways. Some people have them only little conflicts, others have big conflicts. They feel them also, generally speaking, in some area of life. But through the power of the Yetzer HaTov, all conflicts of the human being can be harmonized for the good. And that's the purpose of each human being, and the specific purpose of the laws of the Torah. So that is the concept of, let's mention here, of Shchitat HaSatan, at the beginning of the page, that we find in the prophets already, and as described by the sages, that the redemption will come when the Satan is slaughtered. And behind this goes also the concept of animal sacrifice. Animal sacrifice, we do shchit of the animal, is to teach us we've got to control the animalistic instincts, and then they become an offering on the altar of Hashem, if we really control them. And they say in future times, now go on here, they say Amru Chazal. Zal is Amru, it's short for Amru. Chachameinu Zichronam Livracha. Our sages of blessed memory said, Le'atid lavo, in the future times, mevi'o akadosh baruch hu li'yetzer hara, The Holy One blessed will he will bring the evil inclination, v'shochato, and he will slaughter it b'fnei tzadikim, b'fnei rasha'im, in front of the saints and in front of the wicked. Tzadikim nidim lehem ka gavoa. To the saints, the evil inclination is like a very high mountain, which is a big challenge. Can they really climb this high mountain? As we said, as we say at the beginning of the week, Mi Ale Bar Hashem, who can go up on the mountain of Hashem? The concept of the challenge of mountaineering, mentioned frequently as a figure of speech in the Tanakh, in the Bible, is the concept that life is a challenge, and as a challenge creates the adventure. People are mountaineers. Why they do it? Because they know life is meaningful for me if I have a peak that I want to reach. The highest peak is not to be a physical mountaineer and go to the top of Everest. The highest peak is if you go up and worship in the temple. When ultimately all nations are going to come go up. They say, how can I go up? Of course, you can only go up if you prepare yourself. You can't go up if you're impure. You're not allowed to go up the Temple Mount if you're impure. If a person, in the language of the Tanakh, he has climbed to the top of Everest, and now he wants to go to the deepest point in the world, he goes to the Dead Sea, is he going up or is he going down? In terms of natural geography, it's going down. In the terms of biblical language, it's going up. Because all through the Bible, anyone who goes from outside the land of Israel to any part of the land of Israel, including the Dead Sea, is going up. It's going up. And if a person, the truth is, a person goes from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea, he goes down. Physically as well. But if he goes from the Dead Sea to Jerusalem, it's going up. So the highest point, it says, in the future, will be the Temple Mount. That's going to be the highest mountain. Be higher than the Mount of Everest. In other words, this is a concept. And the concept is that this is the highest level human beings can reach, to go and stand in front of the Holy of Holies. So in any case, in the future time, the saints will say that the evil inclination was at the high mountain. And the wicked one, they didn't remember Kutasara. They say, what was this evil inclination that we succumbed to? It's just like a thread of hair. That's all it is. A hair's breadth. No wider. Halalubokh and Halalubokh. Both of them cry. Tzadikim bochem. The saints cry. They say, how could we control such a high mountain? And the wicked ones say, why were we not able to control this hair's breadth? It was so easy. So, anyway, now, I don't want to go into this too deeply now, but I'm going to skip to explain this. I'll give you here, if you go to the middle of this page, we'll go back to it later, where Avdessa brings a very simple example that takes place, I think, with all of us, or if it doesn't take place with us, we see it in other people. We would apply to our instincts. It says, the dogma. I want to give you an example of what this means, just to bring all this down to earth. It says, Agomer Bedato. Somebody makes up his mind, Shalom LaHashem, not to smoke. Yep. People used to smoking, and then they read all the different things of what smoking does to people, and they get lung cancer and so on. So therefore he makes up his mind, I don't want to smoke anymore. So Berega Rishon, the first minute, Kalevatil Ratzono. It's easy. The first time he makes up his mind, so for that day he doesn't smoke. But what happens? His craving for the cigarette is now double what it was before. The moment he makes up his mind, he can do it. So once he does it, one day. The next day, it's too strong. It's become double. And therefore, he says, okay, I can't keep to it. Exactly. So you'll say, okay, I can only try again another time. Then it becomes so strong, so it falls again. So for the tzaddikim, it's like a mountain. Because they know that every time they try to exercise control, the Yetzer Hara comes along and says, I'm not letting you. I don't want the Yetzer Hara to take over. As it says, v'lecha teshukato. So really, the purpose of the Yetzer Hara is to always give you a challenge. And the challenge, the greater you are, the greater the challenge becomes. So the saint is always, he works well ahead, and he says, well, I'm not going to give in, so I'm not going to look at any adverts of cigarettes, I'm not going to be in company with any people who smoke. He says, it's not good enough, I make up my mind. Because my mind, even though in my mind I've got this, but I have a blind spot. And the emotions create the blind spot and make it greater. I still remember, because, I've suffered over the years also from different things. Even now I have difficulties to see with my phlegm and so on. In early years I had difficulties with breathing also. So I went to different big specialists. So I still remember I went to a doctor who was supposed to be a specific expert on this. A doctor also, a quite old doctor. And in the middle of giving me advice and testing me, he goes out and smokes a cigarette. So I said, well, how is it you smoke? He says, well, you know, I got used to it, but I mean, I don't know how long you could keep it up, but it's very exceptional. But if a person's got a craving, often he can't overcome it. It's not simple. And that applies to all of us. A person got a craving for sweet things, a person got a craving for getting honor, you know, there's some. They get angry, so they've got to learn how to control it. In all these things, when we start working on ourselves, the evil inclination tries to work in the opposite direction. So we've got to, so therefore, for people who really try to improve the tzaddikim in essence, they will prepare for it. And they make use also of the Torah of the mitzvahs to prepare for it. Before I go on with anything now, have you got any questions, please, on this subject?
Spoke about smoking. Rav Dessler was a chain smoker.
Hmm?
Wasn't Rav Dessler a chain smoker at one time?
Mm-hmm.
So he must have known, medical technology is more advanced than from his time, but he must have known that it posed a danger to one's life. So what, mm-hmm. did he overcome it? Or he smoked to the end of his life? Or how?
Like this, I'll tell you why so many Talmudic scholars used to do smoking. Because through smoking, they had the ability to concentrate more on the learning and to do with less sleep. That's well known. It's a help. And therefore, even today, you'll still find some I'm not speaking of the young ones who just take it on because it looks nice and so on, and afterwards you become addicted to it. But you even find, especially the older generation, some will keep on smoking. Although with the medical evidence increasing, it's clearly a danger to health and therefore it's forbidden. When this became clear to Rav Dessler, many years before the end of his life, he decided he's not smoking anymore. So how did he overcome it? He describes it himself. As I mean, how did he overcome it? Because the craving was very strong, already from youth. I mean, he used to learn, let's say, it's not a simple thing for a person to concentrate on learning, let's say, to 8 or 10 hours in a row without interruption, to concentrate upon mastering different areas of Torah, as is done by the great scholars. So that the smoking helped him. But he decided it's too dangerous and can lead to shortening of life. So he decided stopping smoking. So what did he do? And for himself, great people have to do things like that. He told everybody that he stopped smoking. You should tell people. So that helped so to go against everybody knows he stopped smoking, now it's going to smoke. So that's how he's able to overcome it. And the power of busha, of shame, which is strong with every person, with him also, which would put to shame. So if he told everyone that, not smoking anymore, you know. That's it. That's how I was able to break away from it. Yes, yeah. Malach, you wanted to say something.
I was just thinking.
Yes.
The Dead Sea has been called the lowest point that exists on Earth.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. So how is it possible that the Dead Sea, at the same time, in terms of Aliyah, we know, can be higher than the rest of the Earth, although it's considered the lowest point? So that makes the rest of the Earth.
Well, the answer is that the geography of the Tanakh, it goes in spiritual terms. In other words, Tanakh is a sefer which is filled with the words of Hashem. So he says, the different places in the world, you should look at them from a spiritual angle. And you, as the people of Israel, this land has been chosen to be the land of the people of Israel, who have been chosen, or have themselves chosen, to be a kingdom of a priest, a holy nation, and therefore looked at from the aspect of holiness. So any part of the land of Israel is higher than all the other lands. And you know, when this was said, Kanta Valita in the Chumash, and afterwards in the Tanakh, I mean, you could have said, well, you know, it's just an idea of what might happen. But the fact it has happened. I mean, everyone today, this Masos Kol Haaretz, the whole world wants to have Jerusalem, you know. If for Islam, really Jerusalem didn't have any significance in itself. So in more recent times, the Quran also, for the Quran, Mecca and Medina, the holy places, not Jerusalem. But they Jerusalem, Masos Kol Haaretz, the Christians also. The Christians' opposition to Islam in Israel is because they think they're going to get it. They're going to have their Messiah here. And so Jerusalem is Masos Kol Haaretz. It's become the most joyful spot for all mankind. At the moment, it's one of the most dangerous spots for all mankind. But still.
Does it include both of the banks of the Jordan River? Or just our bank? Or just our part?
Well, even when in the, if you look at the initial prophecies, there's very interesting. The first covenant, which Hashem made with Abraham, was up to the Euphrates, even further. Yeah, what's called the ten nations were promised. Then when he made the Brit Milah, it was limited to the Eretz Canaan. Eretz Canaan is not Transjordan. Yes, that was the place of Sihon Og, Amun Moab. So, in the time Shlomo HaMelech, Transjordan, two sides of the Yarden, were both parts of Eretz Israel. But there seems to be, you can say there have been three stages. One stage is Transjordan, which has a partial Kedusha. Then we have the Eretz Canaan, which has the total Kedusha. And then we have the whole of the Middle East, which is at the times of the redemption. It'll all become part of the Holy Land. So it's implied in the first vision given to Avraham Avinu. And Avraham Avinu, in other words, the situation today is also, the Muslim religion, if they would follow the more moderate and the more traditional interpretation, so it's not anti-Jewish, on the contrary. There were times when the Muslim peoples, they adhered to the Noahide code, and today also there are some that do so, like the Kurds, in principle adhere to that. But the extreme elements, they've made Jerusalem their center, and therefore they want Jerusalem, they want the whole of Eretz Israel. They think it's theirs, but it's not really the original tradition of the Quran. It's true that Muhammad, at a certain period in his life, when Jews wouldn't accept him, because he really wanted to become a Jew, Jews wouldn't accept him. So he started being cruel to the Jews. But there were other periods in his life when he was, when he had a Jewish wife, and he was quite positive towards Jews. And in the tradition of Islam, there have been times, even today, like the head great scholar of Islam, of the Rome University, Palazzi, he follows the traditional Quran, and he says that Jerusalem is for the Jews, Mecca and Medina is for the Muslims. And also all Muslims are bound by the Noahide Code. Because therefore he's very much against the extremist interpretation. So if you look carefully, in the Brit Ben of Tarim, there, Avraham's descendants, which includes also Ishmael, who is the descendant, includes also Esau to some extent, but certainly Ishmael, they're included in the inheritance that will come to the seed of Avraham. But when he made the Brit Milah, and he already saw that Ishmael was not really part of his covenant. It's true, he made the Brit also. So Avraham hoped, prayed to Hashem that Ishmael will also live in front of him. But that will take time. So then the promise more directly was to be Yitzchak Yichri Lazara. Yitzchak will be your seed. And Ishmael depends if he does teshuva or not. In the end he did teshuva, and in the end of times also he will do teshuva, because he does believe in one God. But you're going to distort God, you say just God is the creator of the world. He did not reveal the Noahide code. Well, that's not the truth. Then you're not fulfilling the will of God. You may believe in him, may pray to him, but you're taking no notice of his true will. So that's the situation today. Any other questions? Guy, you don't have any questions?
Okay. Thank you.
So we'll continue tomorrow.
That's right, Michelle.